Chapter 4. Revis marched down past the Nighthawk hangars, followed by half a dozen staff, three stormtrooper sergeants, two of Corvain's bound adepts, and a Lex mechanic. They had been working their way through the Citadel's standing defences and supplies for several hours, and more work lay ahead. The internal layout had never been logical, with power generators inserted next to mess chambers, dormitories next to armories. Simply keeping a handle on what lay where and had links with what was a fiendish and unending task.
Two gunships are still out of service, are they not?
Revis asked the Lex mechanic, studying a data slate as he went.
That is correct, Captain, came the reply, sounding more contrite than a mechanicus lackey was wont to. The required parts are on order from the feeder depot at Scalax, but for some reason...
Get it done, Naaman. The Lord Growl was most insistent on that point. We must have them all airworthy within 48 hours.
Ahead of them, menials were working hard. An arc welder was being deployed over a main portal blast defense screen, and teams of laborers huddled around it, their faces hidden behind iron masks. The sound of turbo hammers booming came up from the deeps below, from the larger chambers that housed the big Spider Widow orbital craft.
I had reports of a fault in the third external door mechanism,
Revis went on, still striding, causing a servitor hauling a heavy power wrench to lurch out of the way.
That is unacceptable also.
He looked up, directly past the main overhead lumen banks, to where a thin tube snaked along the peeling plaster, terminating in a cluster of capped-off nozzles.
And make sure that one's been checked out too.
Understood, Captain.
The Lex mechanic, Naaman, began, then stopped in his tracks. Ahead of them, ahead of the scurrying labourers and blundering servitors, stood a woman. She looked unstable on her feet, though was dressed in combat gear of the finest quality. The plates fitted tight to her body, each armoured piece beautifully interlocked, matte black and sheer. That armour had once used Camellio's scatter fields, seemingly, but the nodes appeared to be burned out.
"Reporting, sir, as ordered,"
said Nir Khazad, making the Aquila to Revis. Revis stared at her, lost for words. The assassin's face was grey, which was unusual, as her natural coloration was copper-brown.
"I did not ask you to report to me," he said. "You do not report to me. You report to the Lord Crowl."
"I get bored," said Khazad, then grinned. Very bored.
One of the sergeants grinned too, before catching the look from his superior and extinguishing it. Revis went up to Khazad, extending a steadying hand.
You are not well, assassin, he said. How did you escape Irunian's care?
Khazad looked at him conspiratorially.
You know what I do for a living.
Then she got closer.
You are good at this too, yes?
She was not focusing. Clearly the sedatives she'd been given were still having an effect. Revis beckoned one of the sergeants over, and he took her by the arm.
Get her back to the apothecarian,
he told him, turning back to his work.
And find out what that flesh meddler thinks he's doing letting her out.
The sergeant, a young man named Grieve, dragged Khazad off. A second later there was a crash, and he was on his back amid a tumbling batch of fuel canisters. Revis looked around to see Khazad standing next to him, perfectly relaxed and smiling blearily. The two remaining troopers drew their weapons.
Don't be stupid,
Revis growled, waving at them to stand down. He took a closer look at Khazad. Even half-crazed on meds, she was capable of swatting aside a trained stormtrooper as if he wasn't there. That should not have come as a surprise. Both of them, Revis and Khazad, had been there in those final moments in the vaults under the palace. He had seen the way she fought, albeit in confused snatches amid the flashes of lasfire, and it had been formidable. She was, in her own way, far more deadly than he was. Perhaps she was even more deadly than Interrogator Spinoza, who had proved her worth to the Citadel in such a very short time.
I'll take her,
Revis said, almost without intending to. He turned back to Grieve, who was getting up awkwardly.
Complete the survey, Sergeant, then run the next two levels down. Report on my desk within 2 hours.
Aye, Captain,
Greaves said, looking chastened. Rivas took Khazad by the arm and walked her away, heading back to the elevators that led back up to the Medicaid levels. This time she didn't resist.
"What you people doing down here?"
Khazad asked, looking around her, wide-eyed.
"These are dangerous times," Rivas said, keeping her moving. "Lord Growl ordered a review of the defences, just in case."
Khazad nodded sagely.
"Yes, yes, they came for us too."
"I am aware of that."
Then she seized him by the wrist, a sudden movement that was so quick, so unconsciously fluid, yet steel-trapped strong, that he instantly found himself wondering how she'd done it. She seemed on the surface to move without thought or consideration, acting purely on instinct, and yet her aim, even under such conditions, was near perfect.
"I can help you," she said, seriously. "They will come again. I evaded them a long time. I know how they work."
Rivas wondered if he could shake off her grasp without breaking his wrist.
"Yes, that is why Crowl wanted you," he said.
"I am very good."
"I can see that. You do not need to grip quite so hard."
Khazad laughed and let him go. Then she looked groggy again and took a half step backwards to keep on her feet.
"That thing you did back there with my trooper," said Rivas carefully. "Can that be taught?"
"Everything can be taught," Khazad said, "to the right student."
She staggered, and he grabbed her swiftly, keeping her upright, guiding her to the waiting elevator cage. She appeared to be losing consciousness, and her face went another shade paler.
"Throne knows how you even made it down here," Rivas muttered,
bundling her in and hitting the lock controls. The doors ground closed on rust-blotched rails before the cage started to clang its way up.
"I am very curious," she mumbled,
slumping against him with half-closed eyes, a thin line of drool running from the corner of her mouth.
"This is a hereticus citadel," said Rivas stiffly,
holding her up and watching the floors slide by.
"Best you work on that."
Spinoza remembered Rassilo. The candles in her chamber were burning low, though due to her imminent departure, she would not have them trimmed. She shifted in her uncomfortable fatigues, all greasy synth leather and plasfiber, and tried to concentrate. From the outset, Rassilo had been the one she had trusted. Spinoza remembered her calm aura of command, the gentle air of authority. Rassilo had worn the badge of her office with such unostentatious assurance that it had engendered trust from the outset. That had been the skill, of course, the ability to inspire confidence. Crowl did not have it, at least with her, and that was no doubt why Rassilo had been an Inquisitor Lord with access to the interior of the palace, and Crowl was stuck in Salvator, hunting down gangers and witch cults. They had known one another, those two, in some fashion that she still didn't understand. Probably a professional liaison, but you never knew. Even a dried-up old lizard like Crowl must have had romantic attachments once or twice over his long life, though it was admittedly hard to see what the attraction could have been in her case. Now Rassilo was gone, though, cutting off the last thread of security to another world, one in which the chains of command were simple and well understood. Spinoza did not know what was more unsettling about the situation, that she had been so wholly duped, or that she was now on the other side of the mirror, still working with those whom her original mentor had opposed. There was no one left on the outside now. Spinoza's entire hinterland had become this citadel, its damaged denizens and its decaying walls. Well, that was not quite true. Oaths had been made, but she could think of no likely circumstances, even mortal ones, under which she could take advantage of the very last contingency available to her. Sighing, she reviewed the information a final time. The printed parchment documents would not be taken with her, and so everything had to be committed to memory. Revre, Haldus, 45 standard, access level Azure 9, specialism, modus incom. She looked up as her door chime sounded. "Come," she said, placing the parchment back on the desk and turning in her chair. It was Crowl. As he entered, ducking under the metal frame of the doorway, she thought he looked worse than he'd ever done, his flesh more sallow, his cheeks hollower. He'd been outside, that was clear enough. The promethium stink of the Terran atmosphere still clung to his armour and robes.
"Glad I caught you, Spinoza," he said, a little breathlessly. "I wish to bid you good fortune before you left, and that is fine attire."
Despite herself, she let a half-smile flicker. She was not wearing her habitual blood-red armour, but had donned civilian clothing of a particular down-at-heel kind. It had been altered and fitted to her, but still felt strange, too light, too flimsy.
"Thank you," she said.
"You would prefer to pursue this openly, I know," Crowl went on. "Creeping around in borrowed clothes and with assumed identities is hardly dignified, and Gorgias is still angry with me about it. Trust, though, that is necessary."
"I do not doubt it, Lord," she said.
"We have no defence once we are exposed."
"Yes, I understand that."
"So you have the leads you require?"
"I believe so. I intend to take Sergeant Hegain with me. He performed well before."
"Good." He shot her one of his crooked smiles, the kind that exposed his yellowing teeth. "Then, unless there is anything else..." She hesitated. At times, she thought her master had an almost preternatural ability to catch her at her most vulnerable, displaying forensic insight into her hidden thoughts and intentions. At others, he seemed unbearably clumsy, a clever man who nevertheless misread signals and treated all around him as tools rather than subjects. In all likelihood, both presentations were correct, albeit deliberately cultivated and managed. She looked up at him directly.
"A confession, Lord," she said firmly.
Crowl raised an eyebrow. "Go on."
"I was in communication with Inquisitor Lord Rasselot before she was exposed," she said. "In secret. She gave me the means to get in touch privately in case..."
She searched for the words.
"In case I was too difficult to work with," Crowl finished for her. "Or you required advice on how to handle me. Or I was, as many no doubt suspect, a heretic myself."
He brushed the idea aside with his hand. "Come, Spinoza, I'd have been disappointed if you hadn't been speaking to her."
"It was a betrayal of trust."
"You had to be careful. She was powerful."
"It was not for that reason."
"For whatever reason." Crowl blinked hard. Something swam briefly across his vision, a kind of cloudiness in his rheumy eyes. "If you wish me to be disappointed in you, or find some reason to impose discipline, then you are wasting your time. This work is too important."
She found herself wanting to press him further then. She found herself wanting to ask when he had last slept.
She found herself wanting to ask how effective his medication was proving, and whether he was confident that his desire to press on with this investigation, alone, with such haste, was wise. She found herself wanting to ask whether he still saw the creature's teeth in his nightmares.
"Then take it as a lesson learned," she said, "that any question of loyalty is now resolved. It will not happen again."
Crowl nodded.
"Understood."
He limped over to the desk's edge and leaned against it.
"Though you still think this is all misjudged. Go on, speak. Healthier to get it out into the open."
Spinoza looked up at him.
"No, Lord, I do not know what to think," she said, truthfully enough. "I have no certainties left. Only one thing troubles me, though. The reason she did all this. If Rasselot were right, and the Golden Throne were indeed failing, then would not anything be warranted in the search for a cure?
Do you think she was telling the truth?"
"Why would she lie?" "Because she had been in contact with that thing."
Crowl looked briefly pained and sighed deeply.
"A creature like that twists everything. You cannot ally with them, control them, or reason with them. The only safe course is to destroy them.
Rassilo thought she knew better, and died for her arrogance. If there are High Lords truly involved in this, too, then they have made the same error, and will share the same fate.
But if there is even a risk of it, then should we not at least...
I was in hailing distance of it, said Crowl. The throne itself.
I felt it. Truly,
I never wished to be in the presence of anything so powerful ever again. Having been there, I cannot believe that anything could endanger it. That may be why Navradaran took me inside. At any rate, he was not worried. And do you not think he, of all people, might have said something if such worries had any foundation?
Navradaran's life has always been in there, Spinoza said. I have observed before that when a person is surrounded by something for too long, he stops seeing it truly and cannot conceive of a time when it might not be as it always has been.
Crowl raised an eyebrow. He thought on that for a moment.
That may be so, he said. That may be a blindness we are all capable of suffering from.
Then he roused himself and pushed back towards the door.
But it is still speculation, and only one fact is truly certain, for we witnessed it with our own eyes. A monster was loosed within the palace and came within a hair's breadth of reaching the emperor himself. Whatever was intended, whatever was believed, for whatever reasons, that crime must be punished. I have killed countless souls for lesser transgressions. You have done, too. This is our sacred task now.
Then, do you still see it? Spinoza asked.
Crowl halted.
What do you mean?
The Xenos. Do you still see it?
I do. I hear it sometimes.
You must purge such thoughts from your mind.
I have been attempting to. I will try harder.
Do so, he said sharply.
Then he appeared to regret his tone and offered a final dry smile.
The truth is, I need you, Spinoza. No greater duty will ever come before us, not if we serve in this Inquisition for another 1,000 years. We must not fail in this. We must not doubt.
For some reason, Spinoza immediately thought of Erastus then. That was just the kind of thing he would have said.
Of course, you are correct, Lord, she said, standing to face him.
Already she could see the signals flashing from Hegain, informing her the transport was prepared.
Once more, I have been remiss. I will do better.
Just do what you do so well, Crowl said,
half tolerantly, half wearily, standing aside to let her pass.
And know that in so doing, and in all else, my trust is absolute.
Despite herself, that was good to hear.
Thank you, she said. I shall endeavour to deserve it.